Is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning, welcome to Guardian Radio. You know my voice, it's Levin Miller. Happy Friday. We've made it. It's the weekend. Can you believe it? Oh my goodness. But you hear the music in the background, and so you know that I am continuing in the series with the speaker them trying to kill each other in House of Assembly and all this other stuff happening in the news. There is more to talk about in our nation and its development, although that stuff would be really fun to talk about. Dawn Sanders. Let me just give you this one piece of advice. Never trouble woman, children, and old people. That is the rule in the Bahamas. All right? You just let Glennis do whatever she wants, and that's it. Anyway, we're not talking about that this morning. We are joined this morning, though, by now retired Force Chief Petty Officer Gregory Curry. And he is also one of the members of the HMBS Flamingo. He would have been a managerial rank, all right? So he wasn't a Marine seaman, but he wasn't an officer. So he would have been not a senior enlisted, but certainly one of the more senior in rank at the time. He joins me in studio this morning, and he gives us account of the day we now know to be the incident, that is the Flamingo incident. And we find out from him, you know, what exactly was happening in the mind of Gregory Curry on May 10th. We find out what was happening in the mind of Greg Curry on May 9th and May 11th, because I imagine that nowhere in his mind on May 9th could he have imagined May 10th. And certainly, it is interesting to find out what would have been happening in his mind on May 11th. So he joins me this morning. Mr. Curry, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Levent. Good morning, Bahamas. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you here. You're looking really good. Retirement wears well on some of you old fellas. So you were a member of the HMBS Flamingo. That is correct. And you were a special circumstance, though, because you weren't an enlisted member of the force. Like, you didn't do Defense Force training and come in as a Marine Seaman, etc. How did you end up in the Defense Force?
In actual fact, I was a part of the police marine. Mm-hmm. There was a contingent of us that amalgamated with the Defense Force. Mm-hmm. The Defense Force is a very, very young force. And we had some seasoned police officers that patrolled the waters before the Defense Force. And I was a part of them. I was a part of the technical team.
Okay.
We had an Englishman, Darby Allen, mm-hmm. who trained us. There's two squads of the technical fellows, and then you had the old police officers. So I was sort of a police officer. I had my rank, not a rank, I had my number 1077, never forget that. I actually did police things out to sea,
okay,
but not on land.
Okay. So How much time were you? Did you have in the police force before your amalgamation with the Royal Bahamas Defence Force?
Well, I was pretty young. I spent 3 years with the police marines. We did a lot of tours, a lot of. I was on board Ilucho. That was one of the police boats. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we have about 3 years before we turned over and amalgamated with the defense force.
So you got out of high school, you're into the police force, 3 years in, and the opportunity now comes, I think it's 1979 or thereabouts, to switch over and go and join the Royal Bahamas Defense Force. What exactly are you thinking in your mind? Why the transition into the defense force?
I was actually excited about it. You know, it was a very young force. And, you know, I said, wow, if I wasn't in the police force, I would have gone there and joined at least the first or second entry. And then it happened. They just amalgamated and said, wow, I got my wish. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to be on the defense force. The police force was there. And like I said, we did technical stuff. I didn't really want to be a police, but I was an electrical student, fresh out of school. I think it was C.I. Walker Technical School. It's BDVI now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you get into the Defense Force, 1979. You're into the Defense Force. You enter in at the rank of leading seaman.
Well, all of us came across as police constables. Mm-hmm. And we were in that rank about a year or so. And then they gave out their first, promotions, mm-hmm. and I was a part of that. They picked out certain persons to get certain promotions. So you'll have some type of rank on the force. Mm-hmm. Not everybody is just Marine Seaman.
Right.
And so the Defense Force Office, the police officers actually had the different Marine ranks now, leading seaman, able seaman, petty officers. I don't think we had any chief at the time.
Okay.
And then the regular officer ranks.
All right. So you, you're a leading hand on board HMBS for the
Yes, I was.
You then, that would then mean, if leading hands did back then what they do now, that mean that you were responsible for ensuring that musters are done on board the ship. You're responsible for ensuring that all of those people subordinate in rank to you are present and accounted for when it's time to sail. You know, that kind of stuff. The leading hand is like middle management on board the ship.
Well, in that rank as a leading mechanic.
Okay.
We call it a leading mechanic. In that rank, I was responsible for all the electrical items on board that ship.
Okay.
All right. We had leading seamen who was responsible for the young Marines and all of that. But my job was to make sure those engines and generators and things are kept running. So they put a person at my rank on. That's one of, at the time those ships were the largest we had.
The largest in the fleet.
All right. So they put a leading hand on the Marlin, sister ship, mm-hmm. and a leading hand as the technician on Flamingo, which is myself.
Were you billeted to the Flamingo, or were you like they do now with mechanics and medics? Sometimes you find that a mechanic or a medic will float from ship to ship.
Well, the thing about that is that I actually was sent to England mm-hmm. to actually bring the Flamingo back from England. Nassau.
Okay.
And we actually made that maiden trip. I actually saw Flamingo built right from the scratch. So mm-hmm. we was over there for a number of months. Mm-hmm. I watched it build from scratch. I watched them put on the different levels and everything. Watched them wire it up, and I didn't know where everything was. Mm-hmm. So and actually, when we finished, when the boat was completely finished and they made all their tests and all that, we actually, the rest of the crew came over. Okay. So only technical fellows was in England at the time. Mm-hmm. And so the rest of the crew came over, and we did some drills. We did fire drills and maneuvers, man overboard. We did all that sort of thing in England. Mm-hmm. And then they made the decision to actually
sail them across.
Instead
right.
of shipping it over, but sail it over.
Right.
And a lot of people say, whoa, that's a big mistake. To mm-hmm. cross the Atlantic Ocean mm-hmm. in a boat 103 foot long, mm-hmm. two ships, they thought it was a big mistake. But we took on their challenge, and it worked out.
Yeah.
We had some mishaps. At one time, in the middle of the night, like about 12 o'clock in the night, we had these big giant gas fuel tanks in the back and the stern of the boat. Mm-hmm. And the Flamingo hit a wave, and our fuel tip off and the stern pulled the boat down. Mm. All right, the whole fuel is a big giant fuel tank. We couldn't even go in the back. It's a big fuel tank. I think they needed to cross from England to, I think it's Gibraltar or something. Mm-hmm. That's a long run, a couple of days. So they fill us up with all kinds of tools and extra fuels. And so our fuel tank tipped over and caused the ship to start leaning.
Mm-hmm.
And this is late in the night. And everybody got up, and we had the battle then. Then the Marlin came back, circled around us a couple of times. And I'm not sure what happened. I think we had to cut it loose. But we had a close call from then on our way over. That's the only really mess ups we had.
Mm. So you sailed the Flamingo into to the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
You're now in full operation mode. You said you had conducted patrols at sea as a police officer. You're now patrolling as a Defense Force Marine. You muster on the day to sail on what would then end up becoming the voyage that leads to becoming the Flamingo incident. Is it just a normal time in your mind? Did you ever feel like this patrol would be different?
No. When at my age and the crew that we had a very, very fun crew. Guys, them who really, when they have time to sail, they was there and say, when?
Mm-hmm.
All right? I don't know how it is nowadays, but back in those days, those guys were really, really ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a fun type crew. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody wanted to be with one another. We gel, and he had no problems.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was just another patrol. Now, this particular patrol was, if I can recall properly, this particular patrol was bumped up sooner than it was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so what really happened is we had actually left one or two of our special crew men in Nassau.
Like, do you remember who those people would have been?
But I know one for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That was Sidney Barr. He was our cook.
Okay.
All right. I can't recall the other ones, but I will always remember the cook.
Okay.
Because that's the man who's doing all the talking, cooking.
Yeah, he missed
the trip. I know he missed that trip. Mm-hmm. There's a number of guys who missed the trip. So we was almost like a little bit short-handed.
A small crew.
Yeah.
So you get down there, you're leaving Coral Harbor, and you set sail, you head south. My understanding is that I think you make a stop into Green Turtle Key, and then you leave from Green Turtle Key, and you go further south, and you stop in Inagua. This is about May 9th now. And then the morning of May 10th, you set sail to sail around the Key Santo Domingo area on what would be a routine patrol. Mm-hmm. That is what you recall. Mm-hmm. At what point in the day do you realize that May 10th is now happening?
Well, May 10th itself is mm-hmm. a special day. That's a day none of us are going to forget.
Mm-hmm.
What I remember, I didn't notice anyone was saying, but I do remember this. We were in Ragged Island.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, we stopped in Ragged Island, and they was having some side of social that night, and we told them that we're going to come back. I don't hear anyone saying this, but I vividly remember that. And we went out for a final patrol. And that was on the 9th.
Mm-hmm.
So we must have been in that Ragged Island area. And on that day itself, I'm trying to remember everything. Now, we're talking, what, 40 years?
42 past? Years ago, yeah.
Okay. So everything is going to come flying to me.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke about this incident a number of times, but dates and things I try not to remember.
Sure.
But incidents and things that happen, I try and stick to it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, you as a mechanic on board the ship, when the call was made to conduct the boarding, you're a leading seaman, a mechanic, you're not necessarily a part of the boarding team, right?
No. On board the Flamingo, I'm assuming the same thing happened on board Marlin also.
Mm-hmm.
We had something called action station.
Mm-hmm.
If we're about to, we are pursuing a boat, everybody have to be up.
Right.
All right, because you're not going to know mm-hmm. what's going to happen.
Right.
Say action station.
Mm-hmm.
When we have action station, everybody have somewhere to be. The cook
right.
stopped cooking.
Right.
I think our cook was one of the gunners. He go, did his thing. All the mechanics get up. You have the chief mechanic go in the engine room. My action station was actually in the bridge
okay.
next to the captain.
Okay.
He always wanted me in there because I am the technical technician.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a lot of electrical stuff and radios and radars and everything. And my actual job whilst I was up there was I become the radio operator.
Okay.
All right, up on the bridge. Mm-hmm. Now, you know you have the radio system downstairs mm-hmm. and the radio operator mm-hmm. down there. But during action station, I do all the radio operations upstairs
okay.
and listening for orders and what else needs to be done. So that's where I would have been.
So you were in the bridge, which means you were definitely not going over to the Cuban Graf during the time of the boarding. Yeah, you would have been on board Flamingo.
Yeah. We have special boarding teams. I think we had boarding team one, boarding team two, and boarding team three. Mm-hmm. But boarding team one and two left to after we got the boats to stop. Mm-hmm. You know, we had to do some stuff to get
to stop. Yeah, so tell us about that. You spot them, and then what happened?
Oh, we stopped them. We spot them, and the captain gave me the order to I think it's channel 16. It's the international station. Mm-hmm. And to ask them to stop the vessel that is in the waters at in the I can't remember.
You were the one that made the communication.
I was communication with them. Mm-hmm. Then of course these guys did not communicate back.
Okay.
All right. I said you have to stop your vessel right away, and they continue going.
Mm-hmm. So maybe you should have said it in Spanish.
Well, that's one thing. But I gotta tell you something about that in a little while too. For some reason people think that everybody speaks English.
Right.
Okay? And it's not like that. So I don't really know why they didn't communicate with me.
Yeah.
But what we usually do is to communicate through channel 16, mm-hmm. then you'll tell them go on frequency such and such, mm-hmm. or channel 18, yeah. then you communicate
right
up.
Right. Because
you don't stay on that channel 16 right. straight through because right. everybody else is using it. But I couldn't reach those guys. They refused to stop. So the captain gave the order to fire off a round across the bow of these boats.
Mm-hmm.
So we spin around and fire off a few rounds in the front of those boats.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys just made, they wasn't stopping.
Right.
They gone all out.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they couldn't overrun Flamingo.
Right.
So we were working with them, trying to get them to stop. Then the crucial order come to, okay, do what you have to do. Get these guys to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now these guys are trying to get home now. Mm-hmm. You know, out of our waters. We are in Bahamian waters. Now these guys, we running behind them. It's only a matter of time before they get into international waters.
Water, right.
And problem kicks in and all that. So he gave the order to do what you have to do. And we got one of them to stop, the one that's in the back.
Mm-hmm.
I think we hit the boat itself, and I think the engine area caught fire or just stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one shortly after.
You're in the bridge. What is the mood in the bridge? Because this is actually the first time I've heard the story from inside the bridge. What is the mood inside the bridge? Do you remember who all is there?
Well, we had the one of the young officers, one of the senior fellows, was the leading seaman. Mm-hmm. He was on the wheel because that's his post, mm-hmm. the action station. And the captain was there. The XO, I think, was there also.
Mm-hmm.
And we were communicating and... I feel as if I had one of the best seats in the house. Because every time you action station, I right on top. I can see everything that's going on.
Right.
I can hear everything that's going on. I'm waiting for my orders.
Right.
And the captain, Captain Imageworld, he was a smooth fella. You know, smile. He just give us orders and take that boat up.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And once Imageworld gave an order, there's no second guessing. There's no, you say something, son. You said something, sir.
Yeah.
They get that order, and we do it.
Right.
All right. We had our guy on the 20 millimeter in the bow. He's waiting orders with his assistant on the side of him. Everybody's just ready.
Mm-hmm.
The boat crews are ready. Everybody ready to board and everything. We got the vessels to stop. Then we send the two crews out to board them. We took them under. We decided, the captain decided to tow them. For most of the time, whenever you got a fishing vessel,
mm-hmm.
he just shut the engines and just mm-hmm. tow them in.
Mm-hmm. It's because they do six knots, right? Why would you? They do six knots.
We could tow them
faster than they could go.
Yeah. So we took them under tow, mm-hmm. both of them, one tied to the nest and one tied to the Flamingo.
Mm-hmm.
We had them under tow. And at this time now, we settled down. We thought everything was over. We went to, it's just about supper time. So the cook went back to what he's doing, and we all settled down. I was, me and one or two of the other crews were sitting just midship.
Okay.
We were underneath the anchor, the dory wench,
mm-hmm.
and we were sitting there just relaxing and talking. And now we just thought this is regular arrest.
Right.
We thought everything is okay. And all of a sudden, We saw these two fighter jets just fly around. We figure out what's that all about, you know? And later on, the jets came back, mm-hmm. and they fire across our bow. Mm-hmm. Right across our bow. Rasby's moving on the way. Mm-hmm. They fire across the bow. That's when the captain ordered action station again.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's dropping their doing. Go on in their positions.
Back to their positions. You're in the bridge.
Back
there's
the
man
bridge.
On the gun. The boarding party, though, would be on the captured craft.
You have one more boarding party there, but they have their things to do while they're on board.
Okay.
Yeah. And when I get into the bridge, I see everybody look as if they're panicking. What's going on? What's going on? The captain gave me an order again to try and contact these guys and these MiGs. So I switched to the air to sea VHF.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I gave the call. I identify ourselves as the Bahamian Defense Force. We are in Bahamian waters. And I asked him to call back, and there was no response.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know you said that the Cuban guys, the fishermen, mm-hmm. they might be able to speak English.
Right.
But we're talking about military officers flying MiGs. Right. And you could tell me they can't speak English.
Yeah, no, they should be able to speak some English. Kind of English. Even if it's only a sentence, yeah.
And I call and I call and say, hail them again. And I call and I hail them again. The captain gave the order to put up the ensign, the Bahamian flag, the Defense Force flag, everything was flying.
Mm-hmm.
Already, and the guys, some put them up and everything. But it seems the jets just gone away.
They
flew away.
Okay.
So we went back to normalcy again. We stuck around for a little while, making sure everything's okay. Then we went back to normalcy. You know, we're still on alert, but mm-hmm. we went back to normalcy. I went back to my spot, down midships.
Right.
A few minutes. As soon as I reached them, me and my boy was talking. I don't know who it was, but one of my guys was talking. As soon as we reached them, I sit down. All of a sudden, I hear bloom. And a plow. When I look, it was like raining hot metal.
Wow.
And I feel as if I was on fire. I started... You know, it was like they hit the bench itself.
So you never saw the plane come in the second time?
Not that time. Not the second time.
Wow.
All we hear is this bloom.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounded as if they hit a rocket. Sure, hit a rocket hit us or something. But it hit the dory bench. And that dory bench, it's a, you're talking about about 12 to 15 inches
of steel, yeah.
And that they hit that. And that just exploded.
Right, and the dory wench, for people that are not aware, I'm trying to remember what the marlin looks like because I've never seen the flamingo, but I've seen the marlin. Mm-hmm. The dory wench would literally be almost center of the largest walking area in the back of the vessel.
Yeah.
And it kind of hangs down. It's like a heist for those people that do not
know. Well, at the time, it was up in the air because, you know, we just shot disemboweled the dory.
Okay.
And it was up in the air, sticking up in the air like that.
Okay.
And we had it tied down.
Mm-hmm.
And this rocket or whatever it is hit that and it just melted. And it was hot. There's hot rain fires just coming down on us.
Wow.
And I thought I was on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And at this time, everybody just started running up and down and screaming. And I don't know who I
was. You still aren't aware that you're under attack, though.
Well, obviously, he was under attack.
But are you aware?
What came to my head is that, wow. I know the planes were flying around, but I dreamed it was going to hit us.
Mm-hmm.
And either we were under attack, or was raining fire.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was saying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hot metal. I was like, I feel like I was getting melted. And I still trying to, from that day, I try to remember who was there with me.
Mm-hmm.
My body is full of shrapnel.
So that is the first hit. But I understand mm-hmm. that there are three hits. One at the stern, one at center mast thereabout, and one in the area of the radio room or something to that effect.
Well, I ran back up. I eventually ran back up into the bridge. That's mm-hmm. my spot. Anything happening again in the bridge, seeing mm-hmm. what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I ran back up in the bridge, and everybody's still running around and doing their own kind of stuff. That one there hit this. That might have been the rocket that hit the galley. The galley's in the center of the vessel. Mm-hmm. So that might have hit the galley, but it hit us too. I know one hit the aft section
mm-hmm.
because I could report about that one.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the two what I know about.
Okay.
Okay. So after a while, the flamingo itself just caught fire. Everything was just on fire, black mm-hmm. smoke. And the captain gave the order to abandon ship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't forget, we're towing these guys.
Right.
So when, I guess after the first hit, those guys just cut themselves loose.
Mm-hmm.
And the flamingo's getting hit left, right, and center. He tell the guys, get off, abandon ship,
mm-hmm.
abandon ship. And everybody, I noticed everybody started running, diving off the boat and all that sort of stuff. And I made a decision to myself. I said, look, I don't know, Greg, I don't know how long you can be in this water. Go get your life raft,
mm-hmm.
life jacket.
Right.
So I went down in the back, in the stern, that's where I sleep, right in the back on the starboard side. Then I get down there, I found a hole about 4 to 5 feet. Wide in the stern of that boat, and I could see the ocean. And every time the boat rock, water gushing. And this is right underneath my bunk, so I sleep on the top bunk.
Mm-hmm.
So I got my composure together, and I got my life jacket. Now, in those days, the life jacket we had was like a pouch. You know the pouch you ladies wear around their waist?
Right.
We had a pouch, I clip it on, and the pouch is in my back. So I run upstairs, and I look around. Hardly no one was on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I noticed the captain was still there. Okay? But I said, I don't know what he's doing, but everybody's in the water swimming. Mm-hmm. So I run to the bow, and I look around, see where the closest captured craft was. And I spot it. And I took my belt off, hook it around my neck, mm-hmm. my life jacket, hook it around my neck, and I jump in the water. Crisscross my arms and jump into the water. When I hit the water, I try everything in the world. That jacket will not open up. There's a string you pull. I pull and I tug right. and I, the thing I didn't do was breathe
just
into it. Because
into
I
had
no time to breathe.
Right.
I start from a serious piece of swimming.
Okay.
So I just left it alone. I say, I guess you blow. It's supposed to blow, inflate automatically.
Right.
But there's a string I did pull, and nothing happened. I don't know what happened. So I started swimming. Now, whilst I was swimming, one thing that really happened and never leave my mind. I was swimming along with Fendrick Sturrup.
Mm-hmm.
And Fendrick Sturrup was about 10, 15 feet away from me. And he started screaming and hollering for help and everything. The only thing I could say to Sturrup is, Sturrup, you got to swim. Swim, man, swim. Mm-hmm. And at that particular point in time, the sea itself just caught fire. The whole sea just caught fire. Bam, 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 bam. These guys were shooting at us in the water. Mm-hmm. We were in the water, and they were firing at us.
Mm-hmm.
I made that decision to go down as deep as I could.
So it was a good thing. It was a good thing that life jacket hadn't inflated.
That's the story ain't over yet, but that life jacket... I don't know if it's a good thing I got it or a bad thing, but I can tell you in a minute. So I went down as deep as I could. And I'd been at least 15, 20 feet. That's where it felt. And as I was going, I saw these things in the water. You have 20, 20, 20. Oh, I see these bullets coming down in the water all around me.
Mm-hmm.
After all that, I decided to go and try and catch my breath. I went to the top. And I felt feeling all over my body to see if any blood or anything. And I also looked around, and I did not see Sturrup. I did not see him. I did not see him get hit. I did not see anything. I didn't see him go down or anything. But when I blew, I looked around. He was not there. All the guys that were in the water at the time, they were calling for the guys to bring the dory.
Mm-hmm.
Bring the dory. Every time, bring it, bring it. And these fellas were firing in the water at us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know these guys in the dory wasn't coming, because the minute they come towards that would have been it for them.
Mm-hmm.
It stands and stands. And I started shouting for the dory, too. All right? Because after I didn't see Sturman around, I almost started panicking.
Right.
Okay, so what happened? Why these guys ain't bringing the dory? And I just give up on it, and I start swimming as best as I could. 2 or 3 minutes later, the dory pulled right up to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, Lord, what is this? Thank you, Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Neely.
Whitfield,
I think he was AB at the time.
Marine Seaman.
Marine Seaman? Okay. Yeah. And he pulled up to me and said, let's go, Curry, let's go. He grabbed me and he pulled me on board. And when he pulled me on board, one of the worst things could happen. My life jacket hooked up around the engine and we couldn't get loose.
Mm.
And we tongue and we fight and we pull. And I'd say, go, man, Neely, go. And he said, no, we can't go. And out of the clear blue sky, a penknife just slides straight down to the bow of the dory, mm-hmm. and just stopped there.
Are you still in the active fire in all of this?
Well, but I don't know if it was firing at us at the time, mm-hmm. because we was in the water. I think those guys had disappeared for a little while. I don't know, get fuel or whatever. Because mm-hmm. I don't know if they're coming for us on the fire.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So this knife came down uh-huh. and hit to the bow of the boat. And when he grabbed it and we cut ourselves, I cut myself away and we... jump on board, and then we pick up one or two guys. And we did pick up the skipper, Roll,
mm-hmm.
the commander Roll.
Mm-hmm.
We did pick him up. I remember that, but I don't know who else we picked up. And we head towards the captured craft. Ah, that was something.
So you were on board the dory when the CO was picked up.
Yes.
I remember that. I think they say that he was, in fact, the last man to get off the vessel.
I could attest to that. I thought I was, mm-hmm. because I'd been looking for my life jacket.
Right.
But when I come, I did spot him on board.
What made you decide to go for... I mean, you've got shrapnel all over you. Some people account that the shrapnel was so hot, it was embedded into their skin almost. What makes you decide to go for a life jacket?
Listen, I tell myself, Greg, don't panic. Don't panic. Let's do this thing. I say, should I go for it? Shouldn't I go for it? I go in for it. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long I can be in this water for.
Right.
All right, I ain't the greatest swimmer. I can swim.
Right.
But I ain't the greatest swimmer.
Right.
I even forgot that we had the captured crafts out there. I don't know if they were being attacked or what.
But yeah, you weren't.
They didn't even
you
touch
didn't
those
come,
guys.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't come near those guys. And I made a decision to go and get it.
So you got your life jacket. It didn't do any of the things life jackets ought to do.
No.
But luckily, because I can tell you for sure, if that life jacket was inflated,
I wasn't going nowhere.
You wouldn't have been able to get underneath the water.
No, I don't care how much I fight.
But you said you saw a stirrup mm-hmm. about 10 feet away for most of your swim time, mm-hmm. and then he disappears.
No, it disappears after I went down.
Right. And you come back up and there's no sign of him.
No sign of him.
But you do remember that he was there, basically.
I think all of the four guys actually was called for in the water.
Mm-hmm.
All right? We never got him onto the captured craft.
Mm-hmm.
But I gave him a call for Stirrup. I said, I saw Stirrup swimming with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I know he got off the boat.
Was he the gunner?
Stirrup, no, he wasn't. Tucker was the gunner.
Tucker was the gunner.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure what Stirrup's job was. But he was in part of that boarding body.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the guys on the boat. So I could just imagine the guys who were on the capture craft looking at all of this.
Right.
I guess everybody's in awe. It's in shock. Couldn't even say nothing. Couldn't move. Couldn't do nothing. All right. That's
mm-hmm.
my take on it.
Mm-hmm.
But we really experienced the full thing. You know, I said I was treading water, but for a while, and I wasn't. When I realized it wasn't water I was treading.
Mm-hmm.
It was diesel.
That's right. that's what possibly made the water catch a fire from the okay.
It was diesel.
Okay.
I belched diesel for about a week straight.
So you get to the captured craft. You're now there. You and the CO arrive at the same time.
Yeah.
Tell me, what is it like when the commander gets back with his men on the captured craft?
Well, as expected, everybody seemed as if those guys were in shock.
Mm-hmm.
They wasn't even there.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys were in shock. No one say nothing. The captain just came on board and he gave he asked to get a head count. It was the master at arms at the time who was
Peterson James.
Peterson James.
Mm-hmm.
He got a count, and then we identified who was there, and then we realized who were the four Marines who were not there. We found we know four wasn't there after we made the count,
mm-hmm.
and then we identified who was there and who wasn't there. And then we found these four guys were missing. So what we did. Now, I was anxious to get, out of there. Let's go, man. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized four of the comrades said, I'm missing.
Mm-hmm.
So the captain said, look here, guys. I know we want to get out of here, but we got to look for these fellas. And we looked and we looked. I think we looked for more than an hour. We searched and searched and searched. Now, things started heating back up because
mm-hmm.
those planes were still in the area. They mm-hmm. came back. Whilst we were searching, all of a sudden, we just stopped. Everything just stopped. And I see Peterson James stand up, and he just started saluting. I
mm-hmm.
said to myself, well, James, look at him. He's losing it.
He lost the Eddie.
When I look at what he's looking at, I saw the flamingo stood straight up in the air like that. The point, the bow stood straight up in the air and just going straight down.
Mm.
And some of the crew stood up and saluted with him. I was in shock. I couldn't get up. I didn't do no saluting.
Mm-hmm.
I was in shock, and I just sit there and watch this thing. It was a very, very, very sad thing. We, like I said, we looked around for these guys for more than an hour, looked around. Then the captain made a decision, we have to move. We have to get to land. And he made a decision, we started to head for Ragged Island. Now, before you go,
mm-hmm. you say no one ever questioned the command of Amos Rule. That seems to be the general thread.
It seems as if everything you say was right. Well, that's a good move. That's a good move.
Right, but whenever you talk about having to leave men, like whenever you talk about, listen, it makes no sense to continue this search. I imagine it was the captain that made that call. Did anybody at any time ever said, CO, man, we've got to do one more? Did anybody ever question that?
The question that was asked from my recognition, it was that, Cap, you think it's time we start heading back to land?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question that was asked.
Mm.
And the captain said, listen, let's stay for a little while longer.
Yeah.
All right? And we did. We looked. We shout. It did everything. But, you know, after the flamingo sank, now, this was something I remember. I don't remember much people saying this, but
mm-hmm.
after the flamingo sank, there was about two life rafts actually burst out.
Mm-hmm.
Just flop. Mm-hmm. Automatically left the ship and came
mm-hmm.
above.
At least we know those were working.
Yeah, they were. It's relatively a new ship, you know.
Right, right.
Really, just a little, maybe 2 years, mm-hmm. if that much. And do you know those ships were actually shot up? Those rafts were actually shot up? They shot those rafts right up.
Wow.
And I say it's a good thing no one was on those.
Yeah.
Because I think everything over now.
And I imagine that is where they imagine the survivors would be. Because the purpose of the life raft is for if your vessel sinks, you get into it, it has a little canopy over it to protect you from the weather.
One is a place to walk and go into and everything, mm-hmm. and these guys shot them right up.
Wow.
I don't know if they wanted any survivors at all. Mm-hmm. That's the way I looked at it. And Rashad, that's where I think the main decision was made. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Do you remember much about the voyage toward Ragged Island, in Ragged Island, and the events that happened there?
One of the things that really got me going is our chief mechanic, Dusty Miller.
Mm-hmm.
It became dark shortly after that.
Mm-hmm.
The captain gave the order to turn off all lights and everybody be quiet and let's get to Ragged Island. But the guy who's steering the boat could not see the compass.
Mm-hmm.
So Dusty found a pack of cigarettes. And he started smoking. He put the barrette mm-hmm. over the compass, mm-hmm. and he started smoking it. And so we get to see now from the light. Every time you suck, you can see the light of the compass, so mm-hmm. to keep on course. And he smoked that whole pack. All right. He used to be a smoker, but right. then
y'all put his smoking ability to the test that day.
Boy, look at that way go.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually found ourselves there, and we run aground, and we jump off into the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Now we had, I think it's two guys from Ragged Island on that boat. I mean, it's Kirby and I'm not sure the tall guy's name. I forgot his name, but they were from Ragged Island.
Mm-hmm.
And we scampered through the bush and until we got into the mainland. On foot with the prisoners on tow.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, speaking of the prisoners, someone asked me the other day that did anyone wanted to harm those prisoners or anything? And as far as I remember, there's one guy who really, really was really upset with those guys. That was one of the gunners, too. That was Sans.
Mm-hmm.
He really was upset. They had to restrain him. Say, Sans, calm yourself down. Let's leave this alone. Because mm-hmm. he's the one who still had the gun on the prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And he really wanted to use that.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to calm him down.
Mm-hmm.
James, them had to hold him down and tell him, just leave that alone for now. We can sort this out later. And that's one of the events I remember that people ask me, didn't you all want to throw them on board and cut them and do all this and do it? No. They had these strains and we took our, like you say, took our prisoners onto Machita.
All right. Ragged Island. Ragged Island. Force, I hear my music. We're going to a break. Mm-hmm. You're listening to now retired Force Chief Petty Officer Gregory Curry, then leading seaman Gregory Curry, leading mechanic at the time. As he recounts the incident that we now know to be May 10th, the Flamingo incident. And the reason we do this is because every man aboard has the same story, but a different account. And so we hear Greg Curry's account from the bridge next to the CEO during the initial contact with the vessel. We'll talk about it on the next side of the break. Specific enough. One son died, his spirit
is revisited us. True and living in us. In life, there are always challenges. Today, we find ourselves having to be more self-sufficient, socially aware, and technically savvy. At J.S. Johnson, we are committed to our customers by providing cost-effective insurance solutions. No matter what your insurance needs, we will always be here for you. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
Always on the go? Miss the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back, Levin Miller here. I'm with now retired Force Chief Curry. What do you do these days?
Well, right now I am an instructor at BDVI. I teach electrical. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, I remember that. When I joined the job, January Cummins would have made 18 years. When I joined the job 18 years ago, you would have been a chief petty officer. I think then in charge of the electrical technical training. Down at Coral Harbor.
For the most part, I was in charge of the workshop, the electrical workshop.
Yeah.
And then I went full-time into training.
Yeah.
Shortly before I got promoted to Force Chief.
Right. I think you were the chief electrical instructor when my entry joined.
Okay.
Yeah. You trained. I had some squad mates, Ronaldo Bain, Alton McDonald, and those guys. They were my young fellas. Yeah,
yep.
They came up under you. Some people here are sending us some text messages. It says, Levin, don't forget to announce who your guest is. His name is Greg Curry. Do you know, also, it took me about a week to remember that your name was Gregory because I always only knew you as Spooks Curry.
you know, there's something about that. Back in the day, we had a CB set. Everybody's cars had a CB set.
Uh-huh.
And my call name was Little Spook.
Okay.
Which was Casper the Friendly Ghost Bully Friend.
Mm-hmm.
So I was Little Spooks and everybody used to call me that.
Yeah, that's where the name comes from.
Everybody from the softball park know me as Spooks.
Spooks,
Curry.
Yeah. Because I said I'm trying to find a number for Force Chief Curry. They say which one? I say Spooks. I don't know his first name though, and so I know it now. It is Gregory Curry, and that happens on the Defense Force. There are many people there whose names I do not first name. I know your last name.
Last
I know your rank. Sure.
Yeah.
I know your alias. I have no clue what your first name is.
Yeah.
So take us back to Ragged Island Force. You're now on Ragged Island. You're with your prisoners. You wake up the settlement of Ragged Island. It's a Sunday morning. It's Mother's Day. It's Ragged Island. What is the mood like there?
Well, everybody was curious as to what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
These guys, these bunch of foreign, look like foreign fellas. What are these foreign fellas? Look like military fellas. Where all them come from? But the stories quickly spread throughout the community. And I know we had woken up the local constable earlier that morning or that night when we first arrived, and we got a message out. Now I am not sure that the radio operator had any chance to say anything that we are under attack or anything because we got caught by surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're talking about radio communications with Coral Harbor.
Yeah, with that Coral Harbor. See if only that was gotten out.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he had a chance to get it out. And where I was, I couldn't reach Coral Harbor because we only have VHF
right
here, which is like about
short
maybe,
distance.
Yeah, very short distance, maybe a mile or two.
Okay.
So I don't think it came out. So earlier that morning, they just realized that what the incident would really happened. So I guess, I don't know, I guess they got their people crew together and they came, they made an attempt to come towards Ragged Island to see what's going on.
Do you recall the Cubans coming on the line at Ragged Island?
Yeah, we were all sitting down. I think we just had something to eat, and we were sitting down. I remember really that there was an abandoned building there, and we were all sitting down talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened and speculating and all sort of things, what's going to happen? And all of a sudden, we heard this ship, this MiG cross over. Dead low. And everybody hit the ground.
Mm.
We stopped talking, and when we really realized what's happening, everybody on that island was running around like chicken with their head cut off.
Mm.
And the men, I must admit, we were very similar in the same situation, especially what we just experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys, they were buzzing the island really, really low. But now the message was already out that we were there. And we didn't say that. I don't think they told them that we were being buzzed. But I'm not sure, but I don't think they did. But this happened over and over and over. And then word came that there's a helicopter out by, I think it was the airport area or the landing strip area. And some guys are on these, officers or soldiers were coming off.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody started panicking.
And all have no arms and ammunition because your arms are sunk with the Flamingo.
Well, we actually had, I think we had about four.
Yeah,
two,
the weapons that were with the
boarding party, and two for the next boarding party.
Right.
And that's all we had.
Right.
But we're talking about a fully a-gilled army coming now.
Yeah,
so
that's no firepower.
That's none at all.
Yeah.
All I could do is give away your position. That's all I could do.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't have been a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we heard that. And everybody's still running around panicking, and everybody's like, what are we going to do? What could we do? Mm-hmm. So we just huddled together, and nothing else we could do. Mm-hmm. Okay? But not too long after that, I remember a new set of MiGs fly across the island. Mm-hmm. These were, like, I think these were white. The Cuban ones were gray, mm-hmm. and these ones were white, and we noticed these when they flew over the island. They had the American sign on them. Mm-hmm. These were American MiGs.
Yeah.
And they flew over, they buzzed the island, not as low as those mm-hmm. Cuban ones, but they buzzed the island. And right after that, we haven't heard from the MiGs or
the Cuban
choppers, the Cuban MiGs or the choppers or anything. Everybody just disappeared.
The savior had finally come. Finally.
Big brother. And boy, look at, that was one of the best feelings. Everybody shared and everything. As you know, we see Americans, they only could be for us, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. right? So, those
Do
guys.
You remember the mood of the captain at the time?
But to me, I always picture Amos role as, Captain Amos role as a person who's too stern. I don't care what happened. I did see him smiling when party we ran to. Mm-hmm. But other than that, he still was walking around and
focused,
chin up and yeah. giving orders. And, you know, that's the Amos role I know. I wasn't expecting nothing else. Mm. But, I think they were in some huddle talking to Nassau or whatever when these guys started busting and the rest of the crew just started almost panicking.
We've got 4 minutes left. Tell us, mm-hmm. The Commodore visits you in Ragged Island. What is that like for you as a, you know, not so junior Marine, but junior enlisted? You see your commander. How does that make you feel?
I remember this, you know. I said to myself, what are these guys doing here? We're trying to get off and they come in
they
here.
They come here.
More casualty? What are they going to do? Why are they here?
Yeah.
That's what I'm telling myself, man.
Right.
And that's why I asked my sentiments. I said, why did they come?
Yeah. Send you a know? Plane. You ain't had to come.
Send some American soldiers or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why you come here? What you can do?
Okay.
Like, so, at least they brought the plane to bring us home.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's been 42 years for us. We got a couple minutes left. It's been 42 years. You got some silverware out of the deal, though. You the holder of a traumatic service.
Yeah.
Long service. Mm-hmm. Inauguration.
Yeah, amalgamation. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's it.
Those are your decorations.
Yes.
All right. And how does, I mean, do you feel like the story has been told sufficiently?
Well, I know the story has been told once a year. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you? I was invited to speak to a number of primary schools, mm-hmm. and I did. When I tell the story, the kids were in awe, you know, mm-hmm. and even the teachers. Mm-hmm. And some teachers tell me, well, where I was when this happened. Mm-hmm. You're talking about 35, 40-year-old teachers. Mm-hmm. They didn't know.
Right.
You know, and obviously, so that means, you know, the country doesn't really know about this story, you know. Mm-hmm. Some people know. The guys who are at my age at the time, they mm-hmm. know. They mm-hmm. always coming to me and tell me, well, how are you? You actually made it through all of that. They mm-hmm. come and always talk to me about it. But for the majority of the time, a lot of Bahamians don't know about it.
Let me get a couple of these text messages in. This one says, wow, sad story. Can you say if the Flamingo boat was ever retrieved? No, it is not. It is still in Davy Jones's locker, never to be retrieved again.
One in the ocean.
Yeah. This one says, I just started listening. This sounds like a movie. Would be a great film. I salute those, man. Morning, Levin. Why didn't they fight back with the guns that were on the ship? With all their might, instead of jumping overboard. You want to answer that in this final 3 minutes for us? How, compared to the firepower of the MiG fighter jets, what would you compare the firepower on board Flamingo as?
The biggest gun we had on Flamingo was a 20mm, mm-hmm. and it was like a ancient gun, mm-hmm. and nowhere in the world you could maneuver that with the speed at which these guys were going. But notwithstanding that, if one of the first hits that happened was on the bow section, midsection of that boat, where the gun was.
Where the weapon would have been.
Right. And then we had some GPMGs, which was already taken away. And they was a little bigger than the small guns that
right.
we had
right.
with the boarding crew.
And but even fully mounted, even fully mounted, you cannot get a straight up and down shot with the GPMG.
When we did, I want you to make a mistake, guys. When we did abandon that craft, the path was... The boat was completely engulfed.
It was the smartest thing to do.
All right, there's nothing else to do.
Yeah. It was a metal ship on fire.
Wow.
It's literally now a frying pan. That's what it
turns
into.
We had no chance of fight back.
For us, we're completely out of time. I appreciate you for coming. Let me personally convey my own appreciation and thanks to the crew of the Flamingo. Text writer here says, please convey to Officer Curry our appreciation and thanks for his service. Thank God. Another one says, has a documentary ever been done on the HMBS Flamingo incident? One where Marines, police officers, government officials, and residents of Ragged Island who experienced the incident aftermath are interviewed. No, that hasn't happened as yet. And so we do our part here. I'm doing my part here, Levin Miller, Guardian Radio, ensuring that the story of the HMBS Flamingo is told for the generations, for those people that do not know, have not heard, did not hear, so that they may know. They may know and that they may understand that men have fought and bled and died for country.
Yes, Levin, can I take this opportunity to say Happy Mother's Day to my mom who's still living? Thank you.
Wow.
Thank God.
Okay.
And to all mothers in the Bahamas.
And I must also say Happy Mother's Day to all of the mothers in my life, because they'll kill me if I don't say it. They would kill me if I don't say it. Anyway, Force Chief Petty Officer, now retired, Gregory Curry, Spooks Curry. Thank you so much for coming. You know I say it every Friday. It's Friday, people. Do everything in your power to ensure that you do not kill anyone this weekend. Greater than that, be sure to do even more in your power to ensure that nobody don't kill you. And I'll see you right here on Monday. I'm Levin Miller. This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, the station for fresh news and smart talk. Don't move. News is now.